that's right for you at NJM.com.
Let me go to the line right now. Paul Dayton is an author who has written a book on socialism, and it's quite an extensive look into socialism, and it talks about how giving to everyone takes from all. I feel like this is Animal Farm Part 2, but really extensive. Here is Paul Dayton. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Pleasure to be on with you. Now, I heard you talking before the break about Social Security.
And, yes.
You know, Social Security is a prime example of sort of the message that I'm relaying in that book. And you're right. I call it a coffee table book without any pictures. It's a big, thick book, but it covers 4,000 years.
Yeah, this is a book. Let me tell you something. If you wanted to kill somebody in the book, you want Paul's book.
Or a spider that comes out of your bunch of bananas.
Right. It will. You won't even see the remnants of the spider if you hit it with this book.
It's called, by the way, Socialism, the Gift That Keeps On Taking.
The Gift That Keeps On Taking. Paul, could you do me a favor? And it sounds like you're on a speakerphone, and I'm really struggling with that. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Taking you off the speaker now. Is this better?
That is much better.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about, I mean, give us, I don't know that you can do this in a nutshell, but please give it a try. Your book, and again, the title is?
The Gift That Keeps On Taking. Socialism.
The Gift That Keeps On Taking. Talk about that, could you?
Yes, sure. So this is the nutshell of the book. There's only one class who benefits from supposedly populist redistributionist political policies. And that is the political class. If there's a permanent political class, they're the only ones who benefit. So when you're trying to take from one or give privileges from one person at the expense of another, it seems like you're benefiting, let's say ICC, the Interstate Commerce Commission in the USA. If the railroads were around, people were complaining about rates. They didn't understand why if you went from New York to Philadelphia, it was cheaper to go from New York to Utica. Well, the plain answer was it's because tons of people go from New York to Philadelphia, and very few people go from New York to Utica.
Right.
Commerce dictates that. So they're going. They said, "Well, how come I'm going so much further and it costs so much less?" And so what they did was they caved in and they made this ICC, the Interstate Commerce Commission, a regulatory board. And what happened? It fell right into the hands of the people who ran the railroads. As soon as they got that, these politicians and crusaders got their headline, they got their quote, their ribbon cutting ceremony, they got the legislation passed, and then they disappear. They move on to their next crusade. It's out of the news cycle, and who takes it over? The people familiar with it. The railroad heads went in, and they fixed rates at higher prices. So the railroads were privately colluding. There has never been a monopoly in the history of the world that has ever existed without the help of government. So the railroads had gone for years and tried to collude to have high rates, but it always got broken up because one would go behind the back of the others and cut rates so that they could make more money, the consumer benefiting. When the ICC came in, it codified into law this monopoly, and all rates were elevated. And that is one example of it's the gift that keeps on taking. It gives to the political class only if the voters are not hip to the fact that what is called medicine is in fact poison.
So would you suggest there be no Social Security?
Yeah, so Social Security is a great example. The New Deal, which I call the great failure of socialism, and I cover more in my first book, which I do cover some in this book, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme and has been from the beginning. Frank Roosevelt, who failed at everything he ever tried in his pathetic life until he actually got elected to office, it was the only thing he ever succeeded at.
Yes.
He had, you know, he sounds a lot like a president from my lifetime. He was born into a wealthy family. He messed up everything he ever got handed to him. He had a famous relative who was president about two decades before, and the only thing he ever succeeded at was being elected to office.
Well, why did we keep electing him? Because, I mean, I think he served like four terms.
Yeah, three or four.
And then
was elected four times.
Yeah.
That's correct. So what happened was, the New Deal, the two most cancerous legacies are, number one, the creation of federally dependent special interest groups, and number two, the conversion of the Treasury into a perpetual campaign fund for politicians. The New Deal was the start of you can't beat Santa Claus. So yeah. What he was doing, what the New Dealers were doing, was they were more or less holding people hostage with their own money. There's a great failure of government, just in a nutshell. The Federal Reserve began in 1913, but didn't really start to do anything until the 1920s. Its first major challenge was basically what happened in the late 20s. The effect of the government centralized the money supply and made it so that the quantity of money went down by 33%. So there's a major shortage of cash because of government. And then the New Dealers go in and they tax the dickens out of everybody. And they sit. So the problem is people don't have enough cash. So what does government do? They tax everybody more. Right, take away their cash as the solution.
When you think about let's go back to Roosevelt. Really, Roosevelt and part of that New Deal, and really put many Americans back to work. And many say, and maybe it was World War II, but many say that the combination of going to war and upping production and his New Deal and all of that played a major role of us coming out of the Depression. Give the war full credit for that?
Well, listen, the evidence dictates, these are not opinions. I have almost no opinions, believe it or not. The way I state things is a little colorful, but it's just banality. I mean, there was persistent 15 to 20% unemployment in the United States for a decade under the New Deal. It never got better. After 5 years of the New Deal in 1938, unemployment in the United States was 20%, when the world average amongst the League of Nations countries was 11%. That is, the United States was twice as bad as the international average. The number one economy in the world, after 5 years of the New Deal, after Roosevelt's tyranny, you had this guy in office to be around the gold standard. He's picking the price of gold out of a hat. He's setting it at $7 because the number 7 is lucky. He literally flipped a coin one day, to decide the price of gold for the day. This guy's told he's doing anything he wants. They're taxing everybody. They say they're helping the regular man. They tax movie tickets. They tax liquor. They tax everything he used. Yeah. And then they basically made everybody dependent on the government.
Can I ask you, by the way, this is Paul Dayton, and he has written a very extensive book. It's got to be, what would you say?
I can't believe what it probably cost.
It's like a textbook, to be honest with you, Paul, used in our socialism,
socialist
education system. But socialism, the gift that keeps on taking. Give us examples of current, I mean, we are not a socialist nation. However, we have several socialist programs that are utilized in the United States, maybe healthcare, even the fact that we all put our money together and our tax to be able to make sure our roads get plowed is really socialism. So give us examples of programs that one might think is a good program and you feel it is bad, and give us the proof why it's bad.
Absolutely. So, man, my website, by the way, is pauldayton.us, where people can check out my first book, too. I got free snippets of both books.
.us. Paul Dayton, Dayton, .us.
As in United States.
That's right. And I'm a proud American. I love this country, but sometimes I'm not so proud to be an American because of some of the things, like most people, because of some of the things that happen with government. So in my first book, I cover the ills of socialized medicine in much more detail. And the fact is that whenever you have government touching things, and when you take decisions out of the hands of people who know about medicine and into the hands of people who know about being a bureaucrat or getting elected, what you have is the wrong people making decisions.
Well, we have examples of that definitely here in New York State.
Oh, my God, yes.
I'm from New York State.
Oh, you are.
I grew up in Buffalo. I mean, I lived in Buffalo until a couple years ago. By the way, the city of Buffalo here, that's a great example. Here's a nutshell.
Well, if I could I interrupt you just for a second, Paul, just for a second? I just want to tell you, thank God for socialism, because I'm a Buffalo Bills fan.
And they're building a brand new stadium.
We're all collectively, as New Yorkers, building a beautiful new stadium.
If you're not a Bills fan, you should be now.
For Bills fans to enjoy, go socialism.
Isn't that amazing? A billion dollar a year I mean, each team is $1 billion a year operation.
Yeah.
The NFL are a bunch of welfare queens. All the sports are a bunch of welfare queens.
Yeah.
These people have every opportunity to stand on their own 2 feet. Yeah, and what's happening? That's a great example. What's happening with this money? Oh, we'll take your money to cure the sick. Nobody will ever go hungry. Everybody will be able to read. And instead, what do? They give these billions, this wealth, this place, but they don't need a law. The last, these people can make their own, they can make a new stadium for every game of the season if they need to.
It is true. But as for programs to help people who are hungry or people who are homeless, the thing about New York is there's no reason for anyone to be out on the street living out on the street. There are so many social programs to help them, but you're dealing with mental illness and drug abuse where in most cases, these people don't want to come in. They want to live out on, I guess you'd call it off the grid or whatever they're living. So you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped.
Well, the fact is, freedom to choose is the freedom to choose poorly.
Yeah,
I mean, if someone's life is their own property, a person's greatest personal property is themselves. And when it comes to abortion, you have the slippery issue of the other life, and I don't really. My only stance on that is leave it up to the states, and I don't give a damn what the states do. But it should not be because you're just measuring where taking the temperature of the people at a given time, and at what point is it murder?
How do you feel about what is going on with Doge and with Donald Trump and Elon Musk right now?
Sure. So this again, it sounds good on the surface. We're going to go in and we're going to take away the inefficient programs. But what's the first thing they did? They created a new bureau. Ray Milton Friedman is saying there's nothing so permanent as a temporary government program. By the way, Social Security was temporary. Right. The temporary government program that Frank Roosevelt said he knew for certain. He said it's wrong for us to impose a deficit on the people of 1980 for this program today. But he's a power-hungry zealot. He said, quote, with those taxes in there, no damn politician could ever scrap my Social Security program, end quote. He knew for sure it was a scam. And they crashed into it early, by the way, to try to win an election.
Yeah.
A tradition which was followed up on by several presidents, including Republicans. Mm-hmm. I'm not running for office.
The
way it is.
I would say this. What I do find ironic about, and Andrew, it's you. What I do find ironic about how we're going in, and President Trump is going in, we're going to slash all of these terrible, this thievery and corruption that's going on, and eliminate all these jobs and these government programs. Meanwhile, he's flying off to the Super Bowl. He appears at the Super Bowl. And then a week later, or was it a week later, the Daytona 500. So if we're in that bad of shape and you're trying to save all of this money, why would you spend thousands or even millions of dollars on the security to put the president in an arena? Why would you do that? If you really want to save money, you wouldn't be flying around to the Daytona 500, personally.
That's amen.
Andrew, you can't argue with that part, right? If you're because I would rather the president decide to not go to the Daytona 500 and save 500 jobs. That would be the real Daytona 500, wouldn't it?
You know what, son? They talk about cutting the spending, but they never talk about reducing the total tax burden.
Right,
the total tax burden in this country. But I'll tell you, some other nutshell points you can know about the
U.S. All right, then Andrew has a question here. He's mad at me about the previous point I made. He's staring at me right now. I'm not going to look at him because I don't want to make eye contact.
The total tax burden as a percentage of the national income, okay, the percentage of GDP, until the 1930s was 10% of the GDP, occasionally 15%, except for war. The great failure of socialism, the New Deal, that doubled up to 30%. Then, during the Great Failure of Socialism Part 2, the Great Society and the ever-expanding welfare state, that swelled again to 35 and 40%.
Yeah.
By the turn of the century, it was touching 45%. That's federal, state, and local combined. Since then, it's come down to like the high 30s. But the fact is, the modern definition, the working definition of slavery is more than half of what a person takes. If it's not their own, they are a slave. Okay. As a nation, we are perilously close to being enslaved.
Being enslaved. Okay, I want to. I'm almost out of time, Paul Dayton, but I am interestingly enjoying this conversation. Here is Andrew.
Me too.
Here is Andrew with with a question.
So, Paul, I guess what I would ask you, you say you're a man of no opinions and...
Oh, he has a lot of opinions.
Yeah, right. Well, he's basing them on facts.
Your opinion alone on FDR is proof of that, I think.
Yeah, right. But anyway. Would you describe yourself as a libertarian?
My answer is no, I leave that up to other people. People call me all kinds of names. They call me conservative, they call me libertarian, they call me an economist, they call me a financial expert. I leave that up to other people. I think liberty comes first. I'm not compromised. But here's the problem. People call you a libertarian and they have a preconceived list in their head of all these shackles and chains. Well, therefore you want the ABCDF. You're like, whoa.
Right, don't put me in a box. Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Right.
listen to me. Well, I just want to ask you, because there are people that are going to say, this guy's a kook. How do you respond to that when you're trying so passionately to help people with your message? How does it make you feel, and how do you respond when people disparage you like that?
Well, I talk about the intellectual lower class, and I use the, it's a matter of attitude as opposed to aptitude, and I use psychologists, PhDs, if you like that kind of a thing, and I use that whole chapter in the book about that.
All right.
People who are into obstinate sophistry, I speak the language of evidence. An educated mind permits the evidence to dictate their conclusions. People who sit there and they cast out, they repeat phrases, they repeat magic words, they put on their red ruby slippers, tap their heels, say, I identify as, and they try to turn fiction into fact, and fact into fiction. Yeah. You are not an adult.
You're
a race of people.
I do enjoy the Mondays and Tuesdays, because Mondays and Tuesdays are days when people who watch the Sunday programs begin to repeat the catchphrases that politicians have landed on the Sunday morning programs. Now, this is Democrats and Republicans. Like parrots, we walk out of there after watching the Sunday morning programs and start repeating those phrases as if we just came up with it, when in reality, you're helping contribute to the message of your own political party, both sides.
It's vapid regurgitation. You know, great example of this intellectual lower class. Now, I don't care about any of the politicians.
Yeah.
I care about the country, but not, you know, I'm not told any of these people.
Go ahead. We're going to do this. We can do this again, but I am running out of time. I would love to have you come back on another time, though.
I would love it. I don't want to make you stay long. Thanks for having me. PaulDayton.us.
PaulDayton.us. Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day, and get the book. When you're done reading it, you can use it as a weapon, Paul.
He successfully...
700 miles, get your girlfriend.
He successfully pissed everybody off and made everybody happy this morning.
Ex-girlfriend. That is the crazy thing. He has gone after all parties here this morning. There's nobody left untouched. Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Have a great day. I'm really so glad we did that. Mike's comment, though, is, let's see, I just want to see what he is. This guy is a kook. This is Rick that is saying this. I told you, Paul, that's what they would call you, is a kook. How do you respond? Some people call him conservative, says Mike. Some people call him libertarian, says Mike. And some people call him AI. All honors to Paul Simon. And some people call him Ale. You can call me Al. Let me break after that. Holy moly in the morning. Paul Dayton. That is something. The book is called...
It is called Socialism, the Gift That Keeps on Taking.
All right. Maybe we'll have him back.
Parasitting can happen.